Thanks for tuning into this episode with Edwick Brooks, the founder of Two Sides of a Dime. What I found so interesting about this conversation was Edwick's willingness to try new things. She said, "What's going to give me the life I want?" That's really how she kind of guides her life. And then when she speaks about debt and paying off her debt, she speaks about you really have to have your why. Why are you doing it? Why are you getting started? And she talks about automating how your paycheck comes in and goes to different accounts, like towards your debt, towards your savings, towards your spending. And just an incredible personality, someone who loves to travel. You're going to learn a lot. And she also mentioned how leaving the career of engineering behind, she doesn't look at life as her careers as a sunk cost or her master's as a sunk cost because she always weaves that in to what she's doing next. Enjoy. Hey, I'm Jordan Harding. I grew up watching my dad put on that suit and tie every morning and go out to successfully climb the corporate ladder. I thought I wanted to be him, but I was wrong. I needed to be me. To do that, I had conversations with incredible people to learn how they figured out this whole thing called life. I learned how they overcome adversity and pick themselves up when they've been knocked down. Now, I'm sharing those discussions with you so you can apply those same learnings to your life. Welcome to It's Not a Straight Line. So it's a pleasure to have Edwick on the podcast. Edwick is an engineer, a financial educator and coach, a speaker. And you are the founder of Two Sides of a Dime. Such a cool name. You inspire especially women by sharing your personal journey of paying off about $47,000 in debt. I think you did it in 20 months. You achieved that financial freedom. You're a certified trauma of money coach, and you provide personalized budgeting, investing, and debt management guidance by exploring beliefs around money. That's key, and how those beliefs shape your relationship with money. So, I also hear you're a big fan of traveling. You've done a lot of solo traveling. You seem to be a proponent of that. So maybe we'll get a traveling story or two. But thanks so much for being here and sharing the wisdom and experiences you've gained.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we'll start with you came from Nigeria to Canada, and I think you left family behind to do that, and I'm not sure if it was for studies, but you were studying and you have a master of chemical engineering. And for people listening that have gone through engineering, that is not easy schooling. So I hear, tell me about what you thought you'd kind of do with your life and your journey to come to Canada.
So I knew that I wanted to leave Nigeria. I knew I wanted to further my studies and just kind of like have my own path, but I didn't. It's not like I was dreaming of Canada. Canada was not like, okay, when I finish school, I'm gonna come to Canada. Like, no, I was just like, okay, where is it going to be? Where are the places where I know that I'm going to be able to settle down there and basically be able to live there? So I had three countries in mind. I had Canada, US, and the UK. So I applied to a bunch of schools. I applied to so a few schools in the UK had accepted me. And in Canada, I applied to a couple schools. I think I applied to McGill and University of Waterloo, and I got accepted in University of Waterloo. So, and then the States, none of them even entered me. It was like zero. So I was like, okay, I have Canada and UK. My sister lives in the UK, and she was like, do not come here. It is not easy to get a work permit when you're done school. So I researched what the work visa for Canada was like, and I knew that they gave a postgraduate work permit when you're done school. So I was like, okay, at least I can find a job in 2 years after I'm done school. This is good. So I was like, okay, let's pick Canada. That was literally how the decision. When I tell you, I did not even do enough research because when I landed in the airport, I remember this lady that came to pick me up. They set it up from school. She was like, oh, welcome to Canada. So she started talking about winter. I'm like, what is this thing you're talking about? I had zero knowledge about how cold it was going to be in Canada. So she was like, oh yeah, we have really, really cold winters. I'm like, what? My saving grace was that I came in May. So we're just getting close to spring, so I didn't really come when it was that cold. But to show that, like, it was just not on my radar. Everything that I learned was stuff that I knew as I got here. It's like, okay, so this is how Canadians survive, or this is what happens in Canada. It was so funny. But yeah, that's kind of how I decided to come here. I was just like, okay, where is it going to be? Where do I feel like I can build a career and just, build my life? And Canada was number one.
And did you think you were gonna, have a, do you still work in engineering today, or is it totally focused on your business?
Right now I'm full time in my business. Yes.
Did you always think like, hey, I'm gonna be an engineer throughout my whole like what even drove you to that path of engineering? And you have Waterloo for that. That's not easy to get into.
Okay, I like money and I love to spend money and I like to enjoy my money. So it was which career is going to pay me the most money? And which is funny because I actually grew up thinking I was going to be a doctor. And so when I went to school, I think during the admission process, I had applied and I didn't get that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was so bummed. And then after a while, I just kind of lost interest in pursuing the medical field. So I was like, okay, what's the next best thing? I was like, okay, engineering. That sounds doable. That's kind of how I stumbled into engineering. It wasn't, I had dreams of fixing things or whatever. I've always known that whatever environment I find myself in, I will exceed because I always like whatever it takes for me to get to where I need to be, I know that I have that ability to do that. So I was like, whatever it is. And if I know that I can, if I apply myself, I can get where I want to be. Why not just put yourself in a career where you're going to make a lot of money? So that's why I chose engineering. I was like, yeah, I might as well, if you're going to work hard, you might as well work hard to get more money. So that was the whole goal with choosing engineering.
And so you start to get your first few jobs, I think, out of school. And then, I read or I heard you speak about how, you tallied up debt and you spoke about lifestyle creep as well. So how did that lifestyle creep start happening? And what was the moment where you were like, hey, I need to do something about this debt and I'm going to take responsibility for it?
Yeah, like I said, I do like money and I do like to spend my money. So when I initially came to Canada, so as a student, international student on a visa, getting a job was just it was near impossible, especially back in my time. These days, things are a lot easier for the new immigrants. But back then, you couldn't really work. You had to have a closed work permit where you're working with a specific employer. And then if you're in school, you can't even work because you're on a student visa. So I think I took a term off of work. Sorry, off of school, just so I can work to pay my tuition. And then, as an international student, you don't get loans. So, plus the conversion, even if my parents wanted to support, like the conversion from Canadian dollars to Naira is insane. So, I was like, for me, it was just, and then after school, because I didn't have a PR, I had a postgrad work permit, but a lot of the engineering jobs that I was applying to just write off number one. Line for the requirement was needs to be a permanent resident or a citizen. So immediately I was disqualified. So I was not able to get a lot of the engineering jobs. So for like a year and a few months, I was working a lot of temp jobs. So they would send you to this factory or send you to this warehouse. And it was a lot of, I call them struggle jobs. And then when I finally landed the engineering job, I was like, oh, now I'm making money. I'm gonna spend it. So for me, when I was not making a lot of money, I had that discipline because I knew that I had little, so I had to make it go far. But then when I started making more money, I was like, for me, like it was so strange for me to pay my bills and then I had money left. It's like, why do I have money left? It was like, okay, that means I need to spend it. So I started spending and not being conscious of how I was spending my money. And I knew all of these things in theory. I knew I had to budget, I knew I had to pay off my credit card, but I just felt like that false sense of security because I felt like, oh, I'm going to make more money in 2 weeks. I'm going to pay it off. But then before that 2 weeks comes, I spend more. And then it just kind of snowballed to where it's like I couldn't pay it off with my next paycheck. And then it just kept accumulating. And then I think that come to Jesus moment for me was I was about to turn 30. I had just taken a trip to Greece and I was coming back. And me and my friend, we had this thing that we were doing where 30 things we want to do before we turn 30. And one of the top things for me was that financial stability. I was like, okay, I need to get my finances right. And I was like, okay, I need to pay off this debt. I need to start putting some money in my savings. I need to take my investing more seriously. And then as I got back, 2 weeks later, I got laid off from my job.
Wow.
And it was so funny because I knew that the layoffs were happening because I was working for one of the suppliers that supplied to the GM Oshawa plant. So it was a big thing. We knew that we're shutting down. We just didn't know when we were going to get laid off. I thought, for me, I thought that I had at least a year left to kind
Okay.
of like get my ish together. But then it happened so prematurely, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I was in $47,000 of debt. I had just taken a trip. So you can imagine, like, my bank account was empty. I had no emergency fund. So for me, and being by myself in Canada, not having any family around, not having anyone I could call and be like, hey, can you loan me like a quick 2 grand or 5 grand for me? I was just like, okay, I never want to be in this situation ever again where I felt like it's just what's going to happen to me. So that's when I was like, okay, I need to take this more seriously. So I got a new job, and then it was just full throttle, pay off the debt, and start rebuilding my finances.
So for anyone listening that say is in close to that amount of debt, like did you set a time limit for yourself of how quickly you wanted to pay it off?
Yeah, so one of the things I actually did before I had that job, I figured out, okay, I wanted to pay off my debt in 3 years. So I was like, at the end of the month, I will need around $1,300 after my bills and everything has been paid off. I need that extra cash to be able to throw towards my debt. So that even helped me when I was getting the next job because then I had a salary range in mind for the job that I wanted. So I got the salary that I wanted. So as soon as I started, I got my first paycheck. I already had that extra $1,300 to put towards my debt. So I gave myself 3 years to pay it off. But then the job that I took on, I was working a lot of overtime, and our overtime is paid. And for me, it was just like, okay, I mean, if you're gonna pay me, I'm gonna work it. So I was working a lot of extra hours. So I was getting more money to put towards my debt. So there were some months that I would put around 2,000, 3,000. I was just whatever. It became almost like a tiny obsession for me. Like, if I could stretch my budget, if I could cut something back, whatever, I was like, if I could put a little extra $50 towards my debt just so I can get one step closer, that's what I was doing. And then another thing for me was I started talking about it on social media. That's kind of how Two Sides of a Dime came about, is really just documenting my debt-free journey. And a lot of people were inspired. I was like, okay, now you can't go back because the whole world is watching you. You're not gonna tell them, hey, sorry, I went back into debt, or I didn't pay off the debt. So that was kind of like, for me, that was also a big part of the motivation. And just hearing people saying, because in my circle, debt wasn't something that anyone talked about. And then even the culture that I come from, where everything is a lot of cash based, like you pay upfront for everything. Whenever you're in debt, it's always frowned upon, or it's always shame. Oh, this person had to borrow to buy a car, they had to borrow to buy a dress. It's like, it's not something you want to talk about publicly. But hearing a lot of people saying, hey, you inspired me. I was struggling in silence, but seeing someone like you share their story, it also inspired me to like start paying off my debt, or like have that motivation to pay it off. So that was really, really big for me. And that's kind of what helped me accelerate those payments and pay it off a lot faster.
And did you start just like your personal social account? You were just documenting as you
It
went through
was
this.
literally just, I actually had started my friend that I talked to you about that said I mentioned earlier, sorry, she was
Yes.
also paying off her debt. So we're like, oh, let's start a podcast. So we were just talking, and then I kind of started the Instagram page, and it was just showing what we're doing, like, oh, like this little budgeting hack of how I save $50 on groceries today, and I put that extra money towards my debt. So it was a really just documenting my journey. And then I had all kinds of trackers where every week I'll give an update of how much I had paid off. So that's kind of how it started. So it started with that. And then it was more of a hobby for me for because I started in 2019. So it was just a little for me, it was just like, okay, I'm just documenting my journey. And then it gained so much interest. People started inviting me to speak at events. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? And lots of people were like, teach me how to do it. And I'm like, okay. And then I think I did a workshop once and it got so many people in attendance. And I was just like, okay, the impact that you can make with this goes so much further than the impact that I can make with my job as an engineer. And for me, that's one of always been the biggest thing for me. It's like wherever I can make the biggest impact is where I want to put my time and my services and my skills towards. And it just brought so much joy and fulfillment to me whenever I do a workshop, whenever someone asks a question and I'm able to answer it. And people coming back to me and saying, hey, I applied that thing you taught me. And oh my gosh, it was such a transformational thing. It just brought so much joy and light to my life. And I was like, okay, I need to do this full time. So I think I did it for 2 years on the side. And then 2022 was when I really went in full time.
So someone might be thinking, I mean, I'm thinking it, like you have a master's in chemical engineering. Were you thinking like, oh, that's such a sunk cost? Should I really get away from this? Or were you like, no,
No.
I'm going?
I have never thought about it that way. I've never thought about it as being a sunk cost because for me, all of the skills that I learned, I've always seen life as I've always known that things will never be one directional for me. And for me, and I always learn new things. I'm always reading. I'm always like, what can I learn to help myself grow? So me being an engineer, it's part of what, like, it's part of the skills that I've kind of put in my tool belt for where I could go further in life. And a lot of the things that I even teach, even my style of teaching, I use a lot of things that I learned as an engineer, like my tools, my spreadsheets. And whenever I'm working with my clients, I'm like, how did you do that so fast? I'm like, I've done this for like a decade of my life. So it's like easy for me being able to manipulate numbers and do so many projections, people's finances. All of those skills that I learned as an engineer has also helped me as well. Even learning on the when I worked as a product engineer, learning how to build a product from scratch, learning all the phases, the marketing, all of that stuff is what I am also able to apply in my business. So I see all of that as skills, and it's all part of me. And I can use those skills to build other things. It doesn't have to be, oh, because I got a degree in engineering, I have to be an engineer for the rest of my life. I can still take those skills. Even when I worked in different companies, I learned how to interact with people, customers, suppliers. And now I use that when I'm talking to contractors and negotiating deals. All of that is experience that are part of your tool belt, and you can use that in anything. And I always say to myself, I'm so open. And I'm open to wherever life takes me. Even right now that I'm like dead focused on being in a financial educator and coach, I'm like, I don't know, 2 years from now, I might go into politics. I have never had any interest in politics. Who knows? It's just wherever life takes me, it's just being open and not saying, oh, now I built this business, now I can't move to somewhere else. It's like if that's the thing that is bringing joy to my life in that point in time, I'm open to taking that route.
That's amazing. And I saw you, like, you were really lighting up for those that are just listening, like to talk about that. And it's incredible because people always, and I'm guilty of it, you think sometimes you're stuck because you've done something for so long. And a lot of times people want to put you in that box, right? Where do you think you developed that attitude? Did you like parents or family give that to you? Like, coming to
I think a
Canada,
lot
have
of
you
it
always
would
just been
be part of
open?
that. I mean, I come from a country where a lot of people are just really, really industrious and hardworking. And you see people that are It's just wherever life takes you, just being open and just having that willingness to try new things and see what works. Coming from a place where even when you work hard, things don't work for you, yet people still have that drive and the zeal to keep trying. So for me, coming to a country where it was, I think I had it a lot easier where I just needed to put in a little bit of effort and things worked out. So for me, it's like I had no excuse not to try things, you know, because for me, it's like, okay, if this one doesn't work out, there's like 99 other things that you can do that could work out. And I think a lot of people just have that fear and that fear of failure. And that's kind of what when I started my business, I'm not gonna lie, I had that fear of, okay, what if I do this and it doesn't work out? But it's like, okay, if this doesn't work out, it's not signed to your destiny. You can try something else. It's not like, and this is something that I try to tell my clients a lot of times because some of them are in fields where they're not getting paid enough to even live. And then they're saying, oh, but I've worked so many years and I've built this career and I don't want to move to something else where I have to like make new friends and learn like the company culture. And I'm like, the company culture is not your identity. The people that work there, you'll be surprised 5 years from now, your whole department would have restructured and changed. And those people that you claim are your friends might not even be there. So you're making this big decision based on the people around you. But at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, it's like, at the end of the day, what is going to make the most impact in my life in terms of giving me the life that I want? And if you are doing a current job and it's not helping you live that life that you want, it's okay to pivot to something else. I've seen a lot of people move from nursing to technology and just wherever they feel that, okay, this is something that I can survive. My mantra in life is everything can be figured out.
Love
Wherever I
it.
find myself, if tomorrow I end up saying, okay, I want to go back and be a surgeon, I know I can do it. Because there's just nothing in life that you cannot figure out. If it's, do I need to go to school? Okay, let's do that. Do I need to take this course? Okay, let's do that. Do I need to learn this skill? Let's do that.
That's so good. That's so good. And it sounds like, even if you had to go back to school and figure out how to pay for those courses, you'd be like, let's do it. Let's figure it out. And
Yeah. Do
you
I
know
need to
what?
work an extra job? Okay, that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, I also found it very interesting how when you stated an article or blog when you were laid off, you were treating like searching for a job, like your job, and then
Oh
for four
yeah.
hours, and then you would go work Uber.
Oh yeah. I can't remember I said that. Yeah, when I quit, or sorry, when I got laid off, I was like in that mode when I needed a job because like where's the money gonna come from? So in the meantime, I was Ubering just so I could pay my rent and kind of afford my bills before I had the job. So every morning I wake up, I had like an Excel spreadsheet tracking all the jobs that I applied for. I had like folders where, okay, this is the resume for this job that I applied for. This is when I applied for it. I heard back from this person. Like I was tracking the whole thing. And so I gave myself at least 4 hours per day applying to jobs. And for me, I wasn't just applying to any job because I already knew the salary range that I had in mind. So I was very, very specific about the types of jobs that I was looking for. So anything that I knew was not going to pay me the salary that I wanted, I just automatically skipped it. So a lot of my effort was based on the jobs that I wanted. And I think within about, because I got laid off in October and I had the offer already in December. So within that time, like I was applying to multiple jobs. And then when I was done, I'll go drive Uber for like another 8 to 10 hours just so that I had enough to kind of pay bills. And I was still paying debt, even I had already started paying off debt while I didn't even have a job. So yeah, it was just like, what do I need to do to help me get to the next step that I'm trying to go? I knew that I was going to be able to find a job easily. So I was like, okay, well, it was just a matter of time. So I knew I had, in order for me to get it as fast as I wanted, I needed to take it seriously. So I was like, this is my full-time job. I have nothing else to do. I have to apply for jobs like crazy. And then it just worked out.
How would you, so someone who's sitting here listening, like, and when you coach people or work with them, What's kind of the first? Some people will say, like, well, I can't start paying my debt off yet because I don't make enough. I need to make more. Or I just need to get past this next 3 months because it's really busy. Holidays are coming up. How do you get people to start?
You need to want it. You need to want it. I did the biggest thing for me that really changed, because I've had several incidences when I'm like, oh, I'm gonna pay up this debt now. Because like I said, I've been reading books, I listened to podcasts on finances, so I knew what to do in theory, but I never really stuck to it. And so there are times where I'll pay off a credit card, I'll be good for another 6 months, and then I accumulated again. So it was a perpetual cycle for me. And for me, getting to that space where I knew that experiencing that insecurity, that financial insecurity, where we always say, oh, what if the worst thing happens, like you lose your job or whatever. And I was in that scenario, I had experienced it. So for me, it was like, oh, the worst had happened for me. And I knew how bad it sucked. And I was like, I never want to be there ever again. I knew, okay, I need to really pursue this financial stability, this financial security. So now I had a why. I had a reason why I wanted to do it. For a lot of people, because they have so many conveniences around them, if something bad were to happen, you can move back home and live in mom and dad's basement, or you have a spouse that's going to help you take care of it. So you have all these safety nets. For me, I had nothing. There was no boyfriend, husband, nobody was going to take care of me. I was literally going to be out on the street. So I was like, you can't let this happen. So I had a why, and that was my motivation. So you really have to dig deep and ask yourself, why do I want to be debt free? Do I just want to experience that peace? Do I want to have that financial stability? Do I not want to be able to use that money towards other things like investing, saving, or even traveling? And doing all these things and being able to travel and come back, and you don't have any debt accumulating. All of these things are your things that could be your why. So you really need to analyze and ask yourself, what is your why? And then actually write it down, because that's one of the things I did. I had to write it down. Why do I want to be debt free? And that is will be your reminder, because there are times where you're going to feel frustrated. Maybe you paid off a credit card and then it feels like the balance is never moving, especially when you have a lot of debt. Having that why is really what's going to help you start and keep going.
Having that why. So let's speak. I have a few questions about the fun topic of budgeting, and you speak with a lot of your clients like about that. You know, people talk about I think it's the budget avalanche or the budget this or the budget that. Like, do you really personalize how budgets work for each person you work with differently? Do you have a theory that you always kind of stick to with it?
I really do personalize my budgeting or even debt payoff for all of my clients, because I know that when I started paying off debt, a lot of the books that I read, I tried to apply several times, but it wasn't just working for me. So a lot of the things sound great in theory, but you really have to ask yourself, who am I? What kind of person am I when it comes to money? And one of the biggest things that happened for me was really learning and understanding the money biases that we have, our relationship to money. How did we grow up around money? Before we got on here, you were talking about you and your spouse and how you had different upbringings when it comes to money. And that really shapes how you are when it comes to handling your money. For example, for some people, they might have grown up around a family where their parents were very frugal and they really saved money. Because they were always pinching pennies. For that kind of person, it's very easy for me to convince that person to save, because they've grown up seeing that, as opposed to someone that never really had that growing up. You never saw your parents save anything. You always lived a lavish lifestyle. It's going to be hard to convince that person to save. So it's all about finding out how that person relates to money and then using tools that makes it a lot, like there's not a lot of resistance for you when it comes to handling your money. So a lot of times I really, the first thing that I do with my clients, there's actually an assessment that I have them go through, and it really breaks down how they relate to money, how they see money. And then I use that to kind of create a spending plan for them. For some of my clients, they can really focus on when it comes to their spending plan. They know how to budget, like there's no issue, like when the paycheck comes, they know how to distribute all of that. And then some other clients, it's a lot harder because they have all of these other things that they want to do with money. So they want to put that first before the other things. So you really have to like gauge where each person is and then kind of say, okay, maybe instead of doing it this way, try it this other way. And then they're like, oh yeah, this other way makes sense for me. Some of my clients, like when it comes to paying off credit cards, for example, for some of my clients, I would recommend, oh, let's switch to a cash-based system or a debit system where you're more reliant on the money that you have in your bank account, so that you can pay it off. And usually it's for those people that don't already have that discipline. Example, for someone like me, where I know it's easy, if I walk into a store, it's easy for me to like get tempted to spend more than I plan. And then some other clients, they don't have that desire to, like, for example, one of the stores I like to go to is Zara. I walk into Zara and easily $200 is leaving my pocket. And there's some people that will walk into that same store and be like, what is this? So it's and but if they walked into like a toy store, they're gonna like clear the whole aisle for their kids. So different people have their own, I would say, priorities and what they want to spend their money on. For some people, they might do better when they spend with only cash. But some of my clients, I know that giving them cash, they're not gonna be able to stick to that, and they would rather use the credit card and then pay that off. So it's all about what works for you. And a lot of the things that I saw coming into the finance industry was everything was just so cookie cutter, like, oh, you have to use the debt snowball or the debt avalanche. And then I came in, I'm like, okay, let's create a debt tornado because it's like none of these is gonna work for either of them. And so it's really taking all of those bits and pieces and saying, okay, what's going to work for me and what can I apply to my situation? And then trying it out. Sometimes you might try it out. It might work for you. It might not work for you. And just keep playing around with it until you have that sweet spot. And that's for me, that's kind of how I arrived to where I am right now. And it's kind of the same system that I apply with my clients is really, I always tell them that your spending plan is not Bible, is not set in stone. It doesn't mean you have, like, at the end of the day, you want to get to a point where you feel in control of your money and your money isn't controlling you. But if you feel like, oh, I created this budget and I budgeted $300 for groceries, I have to stick to it. No, maybe you need $350 per month for your grocery budget. That's what you really need. It's like finding that sweet spot. Some of my clients, when I start working with them, they're like, oh, I need to cut back this. I'm like, why do you need to cut it back? It's like, no, I need to be more responsible with my money. But I'm like, okay, but every single morning you still drive to Starbucks, you still want to get your hair done, you still want to get, why are you cutting back those things that are you're still going to do anyways? So what a lot of people do is they feel like, okay, what sounds sensible for me to spend my money on? So they cut back all these things that they think are not necessary, but then it's not in your budget, so you still spend on it, but now you realize that you've overspent and now you feel bad about it. So instead of creating something that is unrealistic that you're never going to stick to, how about we add the hair appointment to your budget? We add the nails, we add the Starbucks, we add the vacation, because truth be told, you're going to do it anyways. So how about you set yourself up to succeed from jump? So that's one of the things I also emphasize again with my clients is like, you really need to do the things that you know you're going to do anyways. You need to put it as part of your daily spending.
Yeah, that's so important. And it sounds like you're even saying like, hey, if traveling really ignites your soul, well, make sure you fit that into your budget too every year, because you can't just cut everything and then be so sad about everything
Oh,
and assume
yeah.
that's what you
And then you
think.
say budgeting doesn't work. It's because you're not creating a realistic budget. That's why it's not working for you.
Do you tell people to like sit down every 2 months by themselves, or sorry, every 2 weeks with themselves, or if they have a partner, to like revisit their spending, or weekly or monthly, or does it just depend?
Again, it depends on the type of person. For a lot of people, they really need to be in the weeds of it and see how every dollar is spent. For me, I'm numbers nerd. So I like to see the numbers. I like to see the data. I'm like, what percentage are we are to this month? And what is the upward trend? And not everyone has to do that. But in the beginning, when you start creating a budget, because you're still in that stage where you really need to figure out the flow of things. How am I spending money? Am I sticking to the plan? The first few months, I think that is important to keep revising and revisiting your budget. But after a while, when you've created a system, one thing that I also focus on doing is automating how your money flows. Once you have money coming in and it's going into different accounts, one of the things that I ask people to do is have a separate account for their bills and then another account for their spending and then one for saving. So, for example, you get paid this month and you know you need to pay your total bills comes to about 3,000. So you just move that to that account. All the bills get paid. And then the second account, you know, you typically spend $1,000 on eating out and every other thing. $1,000 goes into that account. And then you know you want to save another $1,000 every month, save it and invest $1,000. So that goes into your savings and you move it to your brokerage account or whatever. So on payday, you just do three payments and you're good. You don't really have to go back in there and be like, okay, how much did I spend on bagels last week? You don't need to do that because you know that you've given yourself $1,000 to spend and you can spend it on whatever because you know that that's your allocation for that month. So once you've created that system, you don't really have to track it anymore, and be like, okay, what is this number? But for you to get to that point, you need to kind of track it in the beginning stages so that you can figure out, okay, how much do I typically spend on groceries? You need an average, right? So you need to track how much you're spending every month so that you can get that average number. And then once you're there, you can just set up those automations and then you're good. You never have to track anything else in your life again.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Having it automatically go to those three places once you develop what those amounts should be. Edwick, if people are listening and they want to work with you, it looks like you specifically focus on women as well as immigrants. How can they find you, and what type of coaching or training do you provide?
So I do two types of coaching. I focus on money when it comes to building a spending plan, paying off debt, and investing. So that's a 3-month coaching program. I call it Money 360. So really dive into those core aspects of your finances. So those are for like one-on-one clients, and that's for people that want a more hands-on someone looking at my finances and really developing a system for me. And the second thing that I do is with investing, I have an investing course and that's completely self-paced. And that's for people that are beginners or you're an intermediate and you're kind of looking for structure. And you maybe you started investing and picking a bunch of stuff and you're like, I don't know what I did. But now with the course, it's kind of more structured for you. So those are the two main ways in terms of coaching and education. And I also do a lot of speaking for companies, events. I do workshops, I do keynotes. So yeah, those are the main ways to reach me. And two sides of a dime on all platforms. Yeah. So TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm not really active on Facebook, but mostly Instagram. That's the main place to reach me.
That's great. So I have three just last quick questions. You can answer them with a word or two or a quick phrase. What keeps you inspired to do this every day right now? What's your why?
Right now, it's just the impact, the transformation that I see from people. Sometimes when people message me and they say, oh, I heard you on this podcast or this event, or I attended this workshop and this changed my life. The other day, a lady messaged me. She just paid off all her debt. It's like, it's that's the biggest part for me. The wins from people has been the biggest thing that keeps me going.
Changing people, you're changing their lives.
Yes.
What if someone, what would you tell someone who's feeling embarrassed and shamed about the debt that they've built up?
Shame is a difficult one to deal with. All I would say is just give yourself grace because I know I dealt with that shame. And even till this day, whenever I still have that little shock when someone said, oh, you paid off 47. I'm like, well, let's not talk about that too much. But it's an ongoing thing. And the more I would say find someone in your circle that you trust that you can talk to about it. And just give yourself time. Over time, you start to get over it. It's not going to be easy in the beginning, but with time, as you start to see that debt peel off, you start to feel better.
Okay, last one. Where do you hope to head on your next trip?
Thailand.
Thailand. Have you
Yes.
been there before?
No. So I'm hoping to do an Asia leg. So I've done a lot of Europe. So now my next continent is Asia. And I want to do Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Japan, South Korea, just anywhere around all the Asian countries. So that's my goal.
It's awesome. I have one more. If someone's listening who's involved with conferences or speaking, is there anything you're like, oh, I really want to speak at that? I think I can make an impact. Have you had your mind on anything?
One of the things I like to talk a lot about is investing for rest and how people can build your investment portfolio so that they can retire a lot earlier or just take time off of work. I know that investing is one of the things that helped me start my business, and it's just how you can do that because we talk a lot about retirement, but we think about retirement in the very, very, very distant future at 65. But this is something that you can work towards. My goal is to retire at 45 because at the end of the day, I just want to enjoy my life and not always work. So that's one of the things that you can do. And it's one of the things that I really like to talk about. I also like to talk about money systems, how you can build a money system so that you can have an easy cash flow, and your money is just working for you. So if anyone out there has an audience, let me know, and I'm your girl.
I love it. Thanks so much for being on the show, Edgeway.
Thank you so much for having me.
What did you take away from our chat today? I'd love to know. Let me know on Instagram at It's Not a Straight Line or connect with me on LinkedIn. If this episode was helpful, would you mind leaving me a review on whatever podcast app you use? I'd really appreciate it. You can always go back to previous episodes to hear more insightful conversations to help you build your own unique life. Thanks for listening to It's Not a Straight Line. Until next time.